If your day sometimes feels like you've been run over before lunch, this episode is for you because resilience does not start at the clinic. It starts how you prep your body, how you prep your emotions in your brain long before that shift even begins. We know that's the case for our clinical skills, so we take years learning, years preparing, practicing. And it's the same for skills to build our physical and emotional resilience for a career in vet medicine. Today, we're going to give you a pre-shift physical and emotional warm-up to boost your resilience. My name is Aaron Shaw. I am an occupational therapist, coach for vets and vet teams, and founder of Project VetSpan and the VetSpan Collective Community. I am also married to a veterinarian, lucky me, so I can speak firsthand the experiences of what it takes to survive and thrive in the demanding vet profession. And thankfully for me as well, I also have a co-host.
Hi, I am Dr. Jennifer Edwards, and I am a veterinarian, a former practice owner, and I am now a leadership and energy coach and speaker. And as Aaron mentioned, you can tell I too understand firsthand the demands and the toll that this profession can take and does take on ourselves from an emotional standpoint, physical standpoint, pretty much from every standpoint. So I now help people with conscious leadership. And I work with veterinarians and veterinary professionals and leaders to help them uncover the patterns that are driving your life and driving the things that are holding you back so that you can create an amazing life and career that really feels aligned and fulfills you. So I'm curious, have you or someone on your team ever experienced that you have your day, you know, it starts out and all of a sudden it just goes sideways. Things just don't go well at all. And it's because you were not properly prepared. So I'm sure we both have examples of this, Aaron and I.
Oh, yes.
Anybody listening is probably nodding their head saying, yep, I have. Because of course, everybody has. That's normal. It's hard to be fully prepared. And that's why we're here today to talk to you about how to do that in a more efficient way. So, Aaron, would you like to maybe give some examples of what might have somebody not be so prepared?
Yes. Well, I can certainly, disclose mistakes made in a clinical setting. So, again, as an occupational therapist, I've spent decades in hospitals and clinics, and there have been a couple of times that I did not have my head in the game, frankly, but when walking into the clinic. I'm not going to say there's not like one specific day or moment example, but in the nature of, so this one clinic I worked in was a trauma center, which was pretty intense, orthopedic setting. And it is what I would say probably like a lot of vet clinics, or at least intermittently in vet clinics, just like intermittently in trauma centers, there are moments where days that are, you know, pretty standard and routine. And then there are others that are really intense. And not the kind of day that you, or not the kind of case perhaps that you're seeing that you can just sort of autopilot your way through, no matter how skilled and experienced you are. And so I have had those days that have almost like, you know, I'll say totally gone sideways, but certainly kind of snapped me into attention when I realized, well, I gotta, this isn't a daydreaming kind of day. People depend on me, and I mean, it's also part of human nature, but yes, I can certainly reflect on days or at least moments that have not been executed as well as they could have because I wasn't prepared.
Yeah, I can think of many times where I didn't sleep well, times where I'm notoriously famous for not eating in the morning. And sometimes it's 2 o'clock before I would eat anything and not drinking enough. And I just remember sometimes being in exam rooms with clients and almost having this like foggy, glazed over, surreal feeling, you know, almost like a dissociative feeling. Like I was just not even present. Like I was not even there. And it's because my body and my mind didn't have the resources that it needed to function properly. So, you know, I just would power through the day and, you know, probably overcompensating with my body. And it just never led to good outcomes.
Yeah, I think that we've all had to do that from time to time. And again, I think we want to make sure that we're painting a picture here of, you know, being realistic. And it's, I don't think it's fair to think that all of us can have, you know, crystal clear clarity at all time and feel well rested and well fueled and everything all the time. But I also recognize, and we should all recognize, that in order to be resilient in vet medicine and resilient overall, there takes some attention. We have to be purposeful about it as much as possible. And if, like in your example, Jen, like if you find that it's 2 o'clock and you haven't eaten yet and you're feeling a little foggy, it's not probably not hard, or maybe hard in that moment, but maybe after the fact, probably not hard to reflect back and think, okay, there are other strategies perhaps to make sure that your blood sugar is where it needs to be and therefore your attention and decision-making and all those things. So we are all human and we all kind of go through those phases, but as much as anything, it's about being intentional and, you know, trying to apply some of the stuff. And that's what we're going to talk about today with this kind of warm up that we'll talk about. But resilience isn't something we can just snap our fingers, you know, when you walk into the clinic and say, okay, I haven't eaten in a long time, or I haven't slept very well and I'm kind of preoccupied, but I'm going to just open the clinic doors and then magically it's a game.
Right. And it's interesting because we talk obviously a lot about resilience. That's the name of this podcast, is The Resilient Vet. And early on, we defined what resilience is, right? It's being able to last in a healthy way. The important thing for me when I think of it from a context standpoint is to remember that resilience is not a thing, right? Like, I can't go online shopping for resilience. I can't walk into a store and say, excuse me, where's the resilience department? And, you know, buy a box or a bottle of resilience in a pill form. So resilience is an experience. And it's almost, in a way, an after experience. So we go through something. And if we go through it in such a way, maybe we've gone through it for the 100th time or the 1,000th time, and then we feel decent at the end and feel like we can keep going, then we're experiencing resilience. And if we feel like we can't, or we're injured, or we're just done, or we're burnt out, then we're not experiencing resilience, right? So it's important to remember, like, what are we talking about here? We're talking about not this thing of resilience. We're talking about having the experience of being able to keep going in your career and in your life in a healthy way, in a feeling good way, in a happy way for a long time, right? Careers are not for a week. So, you know, and then this ties into what we're going to be talking about, how therefore it's not flipped on in a moment. It's not like, oh, I need some resilience. It doesn't work that way. Resilience is cultivated by being prepared for what you're about to do so that what you're about to do doesn't pummel you and take you out of the game.
Yeah. I think you're thinking about that preparedness. And I think that maybe many of us have, I can think of like big physical events that we've maybe tried, like a big hike, or, you know, again, jumping into a 10K or, you know, or half marathon or something, that the training wasn't maybe quite as we had hoped. And that feeling of being unprepared, like maybe not doing enough work before that event, the same kind of thing can happen, you know, in the day-to-day, walk into that clinic, you know, opening up those doors, thinking, have we done everything that we possibly can to be as resilient? Because again, we're not going to be flipping a switch. You had better get your base miles in months before to get ready to do that. Just like you've taken months and years to acquire and practice the clinical skills and decision-making and the medicine part of it. The resilience is, you know, the physical and emotional resilience cannot be taken separately. It's all part of that package of success and thriving.
Absolutely. And Aaron, you've mentioned on a couple of occasions, and I love this, with you is the first time I heard it, is this kind of analogy or is it a metaphor or an analogy, of comparing a veterinary professional to an athlete, you know, and even though, not, I mean, obviously not all veterinary professionals relate to being an athlete because we're not all athletes and that's okay, but we all somewhat understand athletics and we may even just watch sports and athletics. And this comparison of the preparation that needs to go into being resilient on a field or in a game, and how that relates in a way to preparation for work. And so I would love to hear more about what you mean by that and some examples.
Yes, I love the veterinary athlete. And I love talking about this, not even so much that I would expect a veterinarian or anybody on the team to be an athlete per se. I think that we have a natural kind of resistance to say, no matter whether you exercise regularly or not, like, I'm not an athlete, but I like to go for walks, or I do yoga, or maybe I do go to the gym every day or ride a bike or whatever. But I think we can all relate to, if nothing else, the Olympics, you know, or, you know, watching football or watching baseball or watching soccer or whatever it is. We can all say, oh yes, I'm aware of athletes. And so we know what, you know, grace and skill and technique and, you know, what it takes to be competitive, let's say. But now I think about people on the vet team. So let's think of a sport that requires kneeling, squatting, bending over, maybe some balancing in awkward positions, long hours standing, maybe some lifting and restraining, twisting and contorting, like very few other sports I can actually think of, moving your spine around, your neck around. Now put all of that in a fast-paced environment where others in this sport might actually bite you and scratch you. That is actually part of this athletic endeavor, is that there are treacherous things that are along the way. So, of course, you've put in the time to get the skills for physiology and chemistry and differential diagnosis and all that, and that's great. But you wouldn't show up, you know, not being prepared from the academic side of things. But it seems like too many vet professionals may be showing up unprepared from that physical side of things and in the mental side of things. As you and I have talked about before, there's mental preparedness. You know, we know that these athletes go through a lot of like mental training and focus and, you know, shutting out distractions and focusing on the task at hand. So that's definitely part of that athletic analogy, and definitely the physical component of it. Again, all that contortionist stuff that has to happen, not just today, not just on Sunday game day, but on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, long hours, and then do it again and again and again and again. And if you think that you're going to not only just survive a long career, but thrive, the math doesn't play out very well. So I think that there's something to be said, again, just from like at least an analogy standpoint, that we can appreciate successful athletic performance. You know, watching Michael Phelps swim, you know, once upon a time was like an amazing thing to watch. But clearly there was a whole lot that went into that to reach that high potential. And I think that for people on the vet team who also want to reach a high potential, which everybody I've ever talked to, they don't have the goal of being a mediocre provider. They all want to be exceptional and do a great job. I think that maybe investing, making sure that people invest in these other components will help build some resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. When we show up to work and we feel good, or even if we don't feel good, but we are aware of in what ways we don't feel good, whether it's mentally, physically, or whatever, and therefore can be intentional about knowing what we need to either stay feeling good or to help with whatever doesn't feel good, there starts to become a conscious intentionality about how our day is going to be, about how we are going to be, who we're going to show up as, how we're going to interact. You know, maybe on a given day, you're not going to lift any big dogs because your back is hurting. Maybe you're going to set an intention of interacting with somebody a little differently that perhaps you don't get along with. So there's a lot that can be done before we walk through the clinic door that can start to change everything. And there's this idea of almost maybe even having a checklist in your mind that can be a habit that you can start to build. And it would be obviously very different for each person, for what they personally need, for what their body needs or can do, what they need mentally. But when time is taken to, not in the moment, but when there's some quiet time to really sit down and think about, what do I need every morning to at least have the potential of having the best experience of my day that I can, given whatever might show up? And it doesn't mean things are going to be perfect, but it's just setting yourself up for success. So what we can do is go through some possible things that might be on a person's checklist. As you know, if anybody's listening right now, I would encourage you to grab a paper and pen and just start writing down some notes and think about like what you could reasonably do. And we're talking like 10 minutes here. You know, we're not talking like taking 2 hours every morning. And we'll go through and we'll give some examples of things that could go on somebody's pre-prep checklist for a work day.
Yeah, I think the idea of this is great. And again, to kind of go back to that sort of sports or, you know, sort of game day analogy, there are moments that we can see people sort of like, you know, pause before the event starts or take a deep breath and, you know, the world kind of shuts out. Maybe they close their eyes and they're prepping themselves, you know, mentally and emotionally for what, you know, whatever sport they're about to play. And then of course their physicality. So I like the idea of imagining that right before you go into work, and then definitely another option would be like as soon as you leave, you're almost starting and start, you're marking a point in time of this is when something begins. I got to put on my clinician hat and these are the expectations that are during the work. And this is kind of preparing. I can do something beforehand to kind of prepare for these things, then maybe kind of unplug and go back to partner, spouse, parent, you know, afterwards. But to think of some real practical things that we can do to prepare ourselves for the physicality of the job could be as simple as, and again, we're talking like 10 minutes if you want, going for a brisk walk, enough to maybe get your heart rate up a little bit, doing body weight squats. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in vet clinics and I'm one of these days I'm going to follow somebody just like have a clicker and click how many times there people are bending over, squatting, kneeling on a hard surface, just so I can kind of get some data on it. But it would be wise to prepare your body for that before you just jump into that, you know, jump into game day. Doing a plank. I think this is, you know, doing planks. We're all probably familiar with a plank. It is arguably the most boring exercise in the world. But if this plank activates the muscles that support your spine for spinal stability, for all that bending and twisting that you're going to be doing during the day, it's not a bad idea to kind of start getting that system online before you walk into that first exam room. So it's a simple, again, you can do, you know, all of these. You could do a 5-minute brisk walk, 10 bodyweight squats, and do a plank for 30 seconds or do a couple of them for 30 seconds or a minute. And at least you've literally turned on your musculoskeletal system that you are going to be depending upon heavily for the next 8, 10 plus hours or whatever that is. At least you're giving your chance. You're setting up your body, as you said, Jen, like setting it up for the chance of success.
Yeah. And just to make a comment there, and this is something, honestly, like I even have learned more about in the past year since I've been working with a personal trainer, is this idea that our muscles actually do need to come online. Like one of the things I would always say to my trainer, is he would have me do something and I'd be like, this is so heavy. Like, you know, he always has me doing way more than I would ever do on my own. And I'll be like, gosh, it's so heavy. And then we do, you know, the other exercises and then we come back to do the second set and I'll pick up the same weights. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, and we're chatting. And then by the third set, it's easy. And I remember one time asking him and I said, why does it actually get easier? Like, you'd think my muscles would now be getting tired and it would be more difficult. And he explained this idea of how my brain is engaging my muscles, but my brain and my muscles are starting to communicate to each other because I'm using the muscle, which is making the brain say, oh, pay attention here. And so now they're online, which actually now makes them stronger, and the subsequent sets actually become easier, which for me was completely counterintuitive.
Baffling.
So imagine, like Aaron just said, you do a plank and now you've gotten your spinal muscles and your core all like, oh, well, hello there, wake up. And now they're awake. And now you go in and now you've got that, you know, Yahoo Labrador on the end of a leash that like jerks you down the hallway. And now imagine now you're jerking a spine that has muscles that are engaged in supporting it versus the muscles waking up in that moment when they're not going to be very effective. And so exactly. That's when injuries can occur.
Yeah, exactly. It is counterintuitive. And, you know, I, you know, coach people for health and fitness and been, you know, exercising myself for a long time as well. And I can, unfortunately, like the warm-up part of an exercise to me is almost the most dreadful because it does feel like it's almost like getting an engine to start and getting your body to start and everything's like, oh, everything feels a little stiff and a little tired. And if it wasn't for knowing the science behind it, I would say this is not fun. Like, I don't even want to, I just want to jump into the other stuff. But we are, without going into the science right now, we are literally, our brain is learning through that first set how to engage your muscles efficiently. And so that first set, the first time you engage your core or whatever exercise you're doing, it's a little bit is static. You know, it's a little bit like, oh, what are we trying to do? What's the movement here? And that's why that second set and third set, sometimes you feel like you're actually getting stronger, but really your brain is just kind of coordinating things better. But you implant that same concept, you know, in your half kneeling contorted position, maybe with a little bit of restraining of an animal. And man, you're going to want to have your brain online ready to go, and it may just decrease your risk of injury. So it's worth a 5 or 10 minutes of a little bit of, you know, moving your body around a little bit. And then also, not to go back and throw Jen under the bus, but eat before 2 o'clock in the afternoon would be another probably highlight I would suggest.
Okay, I know.
I mean, you put yourself out there, so I can't not say something about it, but, you know, starting with, nutrition is a touchy subject for people. Some people don't eat breakfast, or they prefer to try to, you know, fast for the first part of the day, whatever it may be. But I mean, the science is pretty clear on, we need to really kind of probably, if anything, kind of try to strive not to start a sugar crash roller coaster, which can be pretty easy with carbohydrates and simple sugars. Plus you throw in a morning coffee and your entire system kind of gets jacked up. So I would encourage, if you could eat something in the morning-ish sometime that was a little bit more protein forward, perhaps. So this could be like a cottage cheese or yogurt or eggs or whatever that is for you, to at least set yourself up for a fairly even keel energy distribution versus a sugary snack or a, you know, some sort of baked good from your local coffee shop. You will get that really near-term sugar spike. And this is what kind of drives us, this deep physiological drive for this. It's like, oh, we know that it's going to feel great, taste great, and satisfy so much. But there are sadly, like so many good things in life, there are consequences to that. And there's going to be a crash afterwards. After your body, you know, manages that blood sugar is going to drop, and you're going to go right back into kind of that, as you were talking about, almost like it feels like you haven't eaten all day. You can still go back to like that fuzzy feeling and kind of not clear and difficulty with attention, even though you had, you know, you ate something 2.5 hours ago. It maybe was just like the wrong distribution of sugar to protein that can make a difference.
Yeah. And for all of you out there that are sitting here listening, thinking, no, I will tell you that I am with you because I am a person who does not like to prepare food. I have, you know, no interest in eating in the morning. And with that, I have learned that it's important and it has been drilled into me. And I will tell you that when you eat protein in the morning, when you don't, you know, eat donuts and, like he said, you know, the coffees that are loaded with syrups and all of the things that are very enticing from a marketing perspective, but not from a nutrition perspective, you will feel a lot better. I even found a brand of oatmeal recently that, one, it's instant oatmeal, not ideal, but again, I'm not going to be one to sit there like cooking oats. It's got 20 grams of protein in one packet of oatmeal. So there are ways, you know, hard boil eggs, keep them in the fridge. You could eat it in the car. There are ways of getting that protein and getting some food into you without having to do a whole lot of preparation. Because I know my first thought always is, I don't want to do all of that food prep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk for a minute about, you know, before we wrap up here, about the mental preload. You know, like how do you mentally prepare yourself? Because as we know in vet med, that's, you know, there's the intellectual game, there's the physical game, and equally, if not more important, is the mental game. Because when that's not there, everything else suffers. And what I like to think about it is, you know, and we've talked about this before, is we know what we're going into. Right? Like there's no secrets. You know, anybody who's been in the veterinary profession, we have jobs, we go there, we know what it is. And it's amazing. It's an amazing career. And at the same time, it's challenging, right? And that's okay. That's normal. So what do we do to prepare ourselves is, number one, is set an intention for the day. You know, and it could be different every day, but you know, sometimes one word, like I used to sit in my car, I used to park my car when I owned my practice and sit outside, and I would create myself as an intention. I would say, who I am is love, or who I am is patience, or who I am is calm. And I would just repeat that over, and sometimes there'd be three words. Like I would say, peace, love, and serenity. And I would sit there and say, who I am is peace, love, and serenity. Who I am is peace, love, and serenity. And then during the day, when that wasn't who I was, I would go back to it and I would take a moment. You know, I had an office, I could go, you could go to the bathroom, you could whatever. And I would exhale and just remind myself who I am is peace, love, and serenity. It could be patience, it could be courage, it could be tolerance, it could be kindness, compassion, whatever you want, who you want to be that day. Set it as a clear intention, because when we do that, we're more likely to live into it, but it also gives us a place to go back to when things aren't going so well. Breath work, you know, some of what I would do just sitting in the car, again, this took me a minute and a half, maybe, is I would just breathe in and breathe out. You can do that in the exam room. When you're, you know, if you're a veterinary technician or an assistant and you're standing there with, while the doctor's talking, just breathing in and breathing out. And if you're a veterinarian, you could do that, sit down to write your record, just pause and take two intentional breaths. Same thing at the front desk. It doesn't matter where you are, but intentional breathing can, it really, I won't go into all of it now, but it does so much for your nervous system. It does so much mentally in so many ways. So, you know, thinking about who do I want to be today? How do I want to be? How do I want to react when I see that person that I don't get along with, or that person that I think is toxic, or whatever, because those people are going to be there. You know, intentionally pre-imagining it going well. And then, like I said, having grace and ease with yourself when you find that it's not going that way, and taking a breath and saying, that's okay, it's normal, and just go back to whoever it was that you decided you were going to be for that day. And the next day, do it again, and it could be completely different words. But bringing an intentionality to, and you know, in my coaching with my clients, we call that energy. And that's one of the things that people learn to do, is to understand energy and how to consciously choose it in a moment, because it's a game changer. It's so empowering. And being able to consciously choose your physical state, your nutritional state, and your energetic state, you get all that. Life, work, everything is a game changer. So exactly. In summary, we talked about having, you know, a pre-game plan, a pre-workday plan. So, Aaron, what were the key points we talked about today?
So, in summary, what I would suggest is that people invest 10 minutes into building some resilience. And this could be as simple as moving your body around a little bit before you go into work, activating the muscles that you know you're going to depend on 100% throughout the day. We want to make sure we activate those before you're walking through the door. So that could be that simple, a simple brisk walk, do a plank, do something, do some bodyweight squats. We're going to fuel ourselves well, even if it's just a little bit. You don't have to have a full meal before you go into the office, but have something that's a little bit more protein forward. Resist the creamy caramel coffee with a pastry, please. I know they're so good, but not on my watch. And as Jen said, you know, doing some breath work. I think taking the time to remember, I mean, what an amazing field to be in, vet medicine. Like, the work is the most noble work there possibly could be. So to remember that and to do breath work, and Jen, it sounds like we need to do an episode maybe just digging in on like that sort of like resetting ourselves. Yeah. Because I think some people may think it's kind of a woo-woo kind of thing, but it is physiology 101. I mean, like you, and even the example you gave of maybe a tech standing off to the side in an exam room, taking like 1 minute of just doing a couple of deep breaths, guaranteed there's a cortisol change, there's a heart rate change. And I mean, magic happens with that, even though some may think like, oh, what's the big deal? It's huge. It's huge. Yes. Practice it. Give it a try. It's profound, right?
It's funny how people think breath work is woo, but yet we all breathe.
Exactly.
So it is physiology. And I would just add a small comment that when you do these things, you are also impacting others. There is a huge cortisol reduction when you're doing even a couple of deep breaths, and the people around you will also experience that. I used to have one of my veterinary technicians just naturally, not a sigh, but she took these intentional, like, and I asked her about it one day, because every time she did it, I felt myself go, and one day I said, you are so intentional about your breathing. She's like, I am. She didn't even know she was doing it, but it was so calming. So just remember that you also are impacting everybody else.
Well, that's, yeah. Well, find somebody like that if you can.
And lastly, just remember about setting an intention for your day, for who you want to be and how you want to be.
Yes. Purpose. Being purposeful. Well, thank you for joining us on the Resilient Vet Podcast. Again, my name is Aaron Shaw. If you enjoyed any of the stuff I was talking about, please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I also have a community called the Vetspan Collective, where there's some downloadable material, tips, tools, and it's a free community, a safe place to kind of chat about ideas just like this. And to get a hold of you, Jen?
So you can reach me on my website, drjenniferedwards.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, YouTube, and all the platforms at Dr. Jennifer Edwards. And just remember that all of the things we talk about are very doable and also sometimes can be challenging to do on your own. So if you're interested in help, reach out. We can have a free conversation and we can talk about how I may support you in creating the life that you want.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Take care.